We here in Texas have actually had a little experience with hurricanes, but things are settling down now. And of course, now Florida is going through this problem of excessive rainfall and wind. But anyway, what I want to talk about today is something that is almost getting boring right now because nobody seems to really care. It's in the news and people worry a bit about it, and that is the budget deficit and the national debt and the debt limit. And a big surprise last week, the Republican leaders got caught off guard because all of a sudden, you know, Pelosi went to the White House and made a deal with the president outside of the knowledge of the Republican leaders in the House and Senate, which is a bit different. And it more or less trapped the Republican leadership and the Republicans in both House and Senate to, you know, go along with the Democrats. And the Democrats, they all voted for it because it was their deal. And but the significance of all this is another story. You know, what is the long term on this? So I'm sure you have an idea or a concept about exactly what's going on here with this debt, because I can't see any real benefits except on the short run, a political advantage for some people. But on the long run, if you care about our future, I think it's all negative.
Yes, I agree. And as you wrote in your weekly column today, you quoted Rahm Emanuel, who said, never let a crisis go to waste. And we just had two big hurricanes, and they are capitalizing on this crisis, literally, with $15 billion that they don't have for Hurricane Harvey. And as you also point out constantly, it's bipartisan. Both parties are for it. When it's increasing any type of government power, all the fighting stops, and they'll help each other out. So with regards to debt ceiling, Dr. Paul, was it really ever a ceiling to begin with? Because it's been raised about 100 times already.
No.
So the ceiling is fake, but the debt is very real. So can you talk about what, actually, if you could talk about, because there's talk of actually repealing that ceiling altogether, what significance would that have, Dr. Paul?
Well, I think it's very significant. They've suspended the debt ceiling for 90 days. This is all a 90-day deal. But Trump wants to get rid of this restraint, you know, on spending. It would be easy to run the government, because I'm sure he didn't have a limit on what he could borrow in the empire, that his financial real estate empire, which was probably a lot more legitimate than the borrowing government. But anyway, he was not hamstrung by an artificial rule. But governments are supposed to be a little bit different, and the purpose of the limit was to restrain government. But it never really worked that way. You know, it was a political football. It always gets raised, and always this threat at the end. Oh, we're going to default. We're not going to pay the interest on our national debt, which is a bunch of baloney. We default constantly. We just print more money and pass it out. So that's just a gimmick. And even if it were some restraints placed on this, you could also, you know, pick priorities. Maybe not hold one payment off, and if you had to pay the interest on the debt to keep the credit up, fine. But the system we have now, even the one that exists right now, meant that they always could assume that the debt limit would be raised, and it was a political gimmick. It was the responsibility of the party in power. This time, there's a lot more confusion. It was the responsibility of who's going to develop a coalition with the deal maker in the presidency, and it turns out it was the Liberal Democrats, which is rather ironic. And some people, even the conservatives, said, well, don't be too surprised. I mean, government had to do something. But like Rahm Emanuel said, in the midst of a crisis, you can't argue with this. You know, one thing I found interesting was an individual that voted against this, Mac Thornberry, who's not a conservative. He's a big government person, but what he really loves is military government, military spending. So he voted against it because in this 90-day period, you know, the government can keep borrowing money and all, but they have to live up to the appropriations and authorizations that have been previously passed. And he said just holding its own is a threat to our national security because they're not getting these hundreds of billions of dollars. And on principle, he was voting against it because it was suggesting maybe too much limitation. That is quite a bit different. And I'm sure you're very much aware of it, Chris. What I want to do is, work out a system where you cut a lot of money elsewhere, you pay some of your debt down, and some of the emergencies, it's sort of, you have some empathy for them because we've messed it up too much. So this is the opposite. They want no limits whatsoever. And I keep thinking, there's no limits on printing money. So now they don't want any even suggested psychological, political limits on spending money. And why should you have them? You have no limits on spending, no limits on printing money. The whole thing is there's lots of limits on helping the poor and the middle class and the people who have lost out in this type of organization. And all of a sudden we have a system where you have many people not holding jobs. The labor participation rate is high. At the same time, the one percenters get wealthier and wealthier. It's not a very good system.
Yes, and just to add to what you're saying there about the no limits on printing money, what you're referring to is when the Fed, they used to tell us there was an M3 money supply, and they said, you know what, we're not going to tell you anymore. We're just going to print the money, and we're not going to let you look at how much we're creating. And there's also no audits, no audit of the Fed. We don't know who they're helping. Are they foreigners? Are they American banks? I mean, we can guess, but we have no idea, and they don't want anybody to know. They don't want any debt ceilings. When it comes to foreign policy, the president says he's not going to tell us what he's going to do, when he's going to do it. We'll see.
Right.
So we can't know. Forget about the enemies can't know. They're supposed to be working for us, and we can't know what they're doing.
Right.
So is this a move for more raw and unchecked power,
Dr. Paul? Absolutely. That's the way it's going, and that will be the check. Eventually, it collapses because it doesn't work any longer, just like the reference I make to the collapse of the Soviet system. But you bring up the subject of M3. I remember when that happened, probably 15 years ago, would be my guess, and I was complaining about it. At least we need to see the measurement, what you're doing. And when I quizzed, the Federal Reserve responded that it was too expensive to keep the details. Pass it out on that. That was just hilarious. I mean, they have unlimited ability to create money and run up debt and provide to take care of all the debt of the whole Congress in the world, but they couldn't afford, to report M3. You know, the other thing that is unlimited is the unlimited ability of the Pentagon to spend money. There are black budgets and everything else, but they don't ever get audited. Nobody even knows what's going on with them. And all they do is they ask for more. They're in the Thornberry's camp. Don't do anything to suggest any limitation. We have a world to take care of. We have our national security interests, and we have to be involved. Don't cut a nickel out of this. And this is why this is not a budgetary argument. This is why it's much different than a budgetary argument, something I talk about all the time. And that has to do with this is a philosophic argument. This is not a tactical argument about how you spend here in a management problem, making deals and all that. That is so far removed from what is necessary. It really, the ultimate question that has to be answered, and that we're going to be forced to answer, that's why I find this dangerous, but also very entertaining. They will be forced, the American people will be forced to ask the question and participate in the answer. And if you don't participate, that means you have given in. The question is, what should the role of government be? And right now, there is no one in Washington, and draining the swamp slogan did not even suggest that we will talk about the role of government. We will change the role of government. We will change the special interests and the details and what we're going to do and to build the coalitions and all this. But we're not going to ask, what is the purpose of government? Interventionism is alive and well. In this administration, this Congress, it grew incessantly from the whole time I was in Washington. You know, it never slowed up. And under these circumstances that we're talking about today, we're limiting one pseudo limitation on it and say, no matter what, whether we have a huge deficit, there's always an emergency. When you don't even have to wait very long. We had one hurricane after another. What will happen next week? There's going to be a need to invade North Korea or something. You know, there's going to be something that will come up. There will always be an emergency. And and so far, they've been able to do exactly what they have done, work a deal, take care of everybody. Nobody gets cut. Nobody will be cut. We have a system that is on autopilot more so than ever before. But it still will be interesting to find out what happens in December, because there is a deadline there, and they will have to address this again. And who knows what will evolve on this coalition.
Yes, let's talk about who pays the price for this now. And speaking of the swamp, we had our second annual conference in near Washington, which was spectacular. And we went out, had some great meals, shopping. On our way home, Dr. Paul, we stopped in Philadelphia. Me and my wife, we decided to walk through the streets, and it was the first time in years that we've done it. And boy, what a different story than from Washington. Places were boarded up. There were homeless on, I would say, every single street corner. And I even, for the first time in my life, maybe a 10-year-old boy come up and asking me for money. I've never experienced that in America. So Dr. Paul, please explain how the middle class is getting squashed by this unchecked power that we're talking about today.
Yes, and that is going to continue. But there was a pretty astute prediction made by Mises many, many years ago, because he made this point, and I'm sure the other early Austrian economists made the same point, but I remember reading it in Human Action, and he said that if you destroy a currency, a sound currency, which was the restraining instrument on spending, because you can't print gold, so there would be always restraints. You'd have to ask the people for the money, because you'd have to through taxation and all. So, but he said, when you destroy a currency, you always destroy the middle class. And it keeps coming back to me, because you witnessed it. You saw it there. And, you know, getting the right image is pretty important. Now, Chris, if you look at the crowd that we had there, you know, we had a sellout crowd and a lot of young people. I was delighted to see people there. And boy, were they with us. And we had a lot of talk about how unfair the government is to the people who tell the truth. Don't tell the truth, you can get in a lot of trouble. And we heard some sad story. So Washington, D.C., or the streets of Philadelphia, or inner cities of Detroit and Chicago, that isn't really America. The America that I like to think about will be at these crowds that I have seen at the universities, in spite of the image that universities are getting right now. But you can still find a nucleus, a remnant of people, some active individuals who are interested in trying to fix these problems. And it's a completely different story. If you go to a Mises function and all the college kids are there, and I mentioned in my talk the other day about how many professors, have been, encouraged to go through the Mises Institute. Thousands, and then they have thousands and thousands of people they influence, and that is where the action is. So there is something going on in this country. In the 20s, you know, everybody believed in capitalism and the gold standard, and even Roosevelt ran on that. At the same time, the universities were filled with the incoming influx of the progressive era professors, the socialists, and then communists and all. And they're still pretty much loaded with them, but there is a different type of infiltration now with more decent ideas, the ideas of liberty. And that's where we've had this tremendous refinement on the understanding of monetary policy and economic policy. So even though when you walk on the streets of Philadelphia, it might give you an incentive for us to work harder, but we have to look to the good side of it and what can happen. So I'm looking forward to some positive things that we hope we see come about here in the next decade or two.
Yes, it was very encouraging. There were so many people coming up, shaking our hands, saying they love the Liberty Report and everything we're doing. And as much as we focus on the problems, and they have to be pointed out, there is a silver lining, and there is a remnant out there that, and you made a great point in your speech at the conference that, you know, when the American revolutionaries were spreading the message of liberty, they weren't doing it in front of 100,000 people. They were doing it in small groups here and there. And we have the ability to do that today, especially with social media, to just get the message of liberty out there. And don't worry about who believes and who doesn't believe, but whatever they hear, they can't unhear. And whatever they see, if you make a video, they can't unsee it. It's in their mind forever. So I think we do have a way out of this, as bad as it is. And if you could close the show, giving our viewers a positive message to be optimistic despite this unchecked power that is streaming right at us.
Very good, Chris. And I want to thank you for being our co-host today. And I'll be back talking with you soon. But I want to just mention to our viewers and follow up on exactly what Chris was saying. Because without some hope and some optimism, you might as well go hide yourself in a hole. The other thing, though, that I think is neat about it, and we sensed this at our meeting in Alexandria, and that is that when you meet people that have the same concerns and same interests, and because they have this sense that they're all by themselves and they're with other people, and I said this very often on college campuses, that yes, it's hard work. It's hard work. You have to study and organize and campaign and do all this, but you have to have some fun doing it. And it is. It's fun associating with other individuals. But you do want to see success. And the whole thing is ideas do have consequences. It's the only thing really that counts. You couldn't have had our system deteriorate like it has recently without the progressivism and the philosophers and the teachers, from the beginning of the last century, who changed our foreign policy, who changed our monetary policy, gave us the Federal Reserve, changed our attitude about the income tax, taxing individuals. That's all part of that era. But it was ideological before it was practical in the mainstream. But you do have to get support from a large number of people to go along. But they'll go along. The majority goes along if they believe it's in their self-interest. Today, it's pretty difficult. It was mentioned at our meeting that I always voted against flood insurance in my district, and it was always getting flooded. But I think and it's not easy. You have to show people that their interests are best served in liberty, and that just being dependent on government is a negative. And now that's all we're seeing now, the consequence of big government, the failure of big government. And yet there is a much louder clamor for bigger government. But the noise you hear in Washington and the support you get and the coalitions to come together with Republicans and Democrats and fighting these wars constantly, which make no sense, and continuing with the deficits. And of course, no matter what they say in Washington, they are going to cling to this whole principle of a central bank printing money at will, because it can't work any other way, because you can't tax people for all this and nobody's going to take the cuts. But the dollar will be devalued. It's doing that right now. If this will end because the real wealth of the country is shrinking, but the whole effort has to be designed to get the maximum number of people that we can find to understand what it is to believe in personal liberty and why it's a God-given right to have a right to your life, a right to your liberty, and a right to use that as you see fit, even if you make mistakes. You know, it's a wonderful system because, obviously, if you look at the record, there is no doubt the freer society, the more prosperous it has been, and the larger the middle class. I think that sounds like a pretty good idea to me. But I do want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report, and please come back soon.